are listening to the Drew and Jay podcast, brought to you by 21 Media Productions. He is Drew Lasker. I am Jay Marriott. This is episode 8. We head to the Big Smoke to sit down with London Lions guard sensation, Matt Morgan. But before we get into this episode, let's share a little message from our sponsor. We've teamed up with an incredible basketball clothing brand that's going to take your style and game to a whole new level.
So get ready to elevate your passion for basketball, both on and off the court, because we're proud to introduce our collaboration with Always Ballin', the brand that's redefining basketball fashion.
That's right, folks. Always Ballin' isn't just a clothing brand. It's a lifestyle. Whether you're shooting hoops at the park, catching a game with your friends, or just want to rock some seriously stylish threads, Always Ballin' has got you covered. From premium jerseys to trendy streetwear, they've got it all. And here's the best part. Not only are they our podcast's official merchandise partner, but they're also creating some exclusive Drew and Jay show gear that you won't find anywhere else.
Yes, right, guys. So get ready to rep your love for basketball like never before with Always Ballin' top-notch apparel. And stay tuned, because we got some exciting giveaways and promotions coming your way soon. So until then, keep listening to us here on the show for the latest on all things basketball. And remember, when it comes to style and passion for the game, we're always balling.
Let's welcome this week's guest. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Thank you. I appreciate y'all.
Well, before we can get into some deeper questions, it's time to play the Marriott Minute. So for clarity, some struggle with this, not naming any names, Pat. I give you a question and you have to give me a one-word answer. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Here we go. Cornell University.
Ivy League.
The G League.
A grind.
France.
Paris.
Turkey.
Konya.
Sam Decker.
MVP.
London Lions.
Champions.
Luke Nelson.
There's a lot of words, but GB General.
Current game day sneaker.
New Balance.
Favorite NBA team.
Golden State Warriors.
Favorite NBA player.
Steph Curry.
Matt Morgan's nickname.
Mickey.
European basketball.
Long.
The city of London.
Amazing.
Matt, great job. You have advanced to the next round. Man. That's this week's Marriott Minute. You pretty much smashed that, I must say.
That's that Ivy League reaction time right there.
For real. Clearly. Man, it's great to have you on the show, man. I almost feel like I know you because I've been around you guys so much this season, but I really don't know you. So it was kind of interesting, you know, kind of researching you. But what's fascinating is that you don't usually get the combination of a star player like you've been for our league on the court, but also you're a star off the court. You're an Ivy League, former Ivy League player, and there's a couple guys in the league. But after researching you, it all makes sense. And I just want to give the fans out there a little bit of context, because I'm sure most of them wouldn't know, is that your dad, Lamont, played at Georgetown University, mm-hmm. which is Big East, which is big time basketball for those that don't know. But then also he got an MBA from John Hopkins, which is a big time university, and served as a trader with the Federal National Mortgage Association before beginning a 16-year career with New Balance. So, you know, I just want you to start things off by touching on, you know, what did your dad teach you about the game on the court? But then also, how important did they push academics off the court as well and in the classroom?
Yeah, so my dad taught me a lot about basketball. Like you said, he played at such a high level. It's funny because when I was younger, I went through a phase where how all kids are, you don't want to listen to your parents. So he coached me for a little while, but obviously didn't want to listen to him, didn't respond very well. So he kind of handed the reins over to my coaches during AAU, during high school, stuff like that. And he kind of took that secondary role of, you know, after games, talking to me, giving me pointers and stuff like that. So on the court, he's honestly been like one of my biggest supporters besides my mom, of course. But it was for me because I have three little brothers trying to set that example in the house of, you know, what the standard is. And for me, it was following in his footsteps, and he taught me so much. But off the court, academically, you know, I got to give a lot of credit to my mom. She was the one always pushing me, A's and B's, good grades, you know, all that stuff that got me into the Ivy League. You know, she did a lot of that, pushing me, whether it was, you know, honors classes, regular classes. My mom was a huge part of that. So it was good to have that balance of my dad being, you know, my person I can go to on the court, and then off the court, my mom handling all the academics and stuff like that. So I give them a lot of credit for helping me get to where I'm at right now.
And you just turned 26 years old. Happy belated birthday. And Jay and I can attest, when you're 26, you think you're going to play forever, but obviously it's not realistic. But if you weren't hooping, what would you be doing with an Ivy League background education? What would you be doing?
So I think my biggest, you know, thing that I really enjoy doing is sports marketing. You know, I took a class or two in that at Cornell, and those were probably the highest grades that I got. So if I wasn't hooping, I'd definitely be doing something in sports marketing. You know, I just switched agencies to Wasserman. So hopefully this summer I can get a little taste of, you know, being in the building with those types of people, dealing with some of their players like Shai Gilgeous, Sabonis, Breonna Stewart, who I know really well, and just kind of seeing how they handle their sports marketing off the court. And then obviously my dad works for New Balance. So, you know, listening to conversations with him talking about, you know, Kawhi's shoes or Jamal Murray's ad campaigns and stuff like that, that's something that I'll probably be doing.
Well, I think we're going to need a whole other podcast to deep dive into that, because that's a great love for myself. But I want to stay on this kind of Ivy League, kind of bridging over to the NBA a little bit. Like, one of my best friends is a Cornell alumni and a big-time shooter like yourself. So shout out Cody Toppert. So he's the current head coach of the Washington Wizards G League. Mm-hmm. And my question to you is having spent two seasons in the Toronto Raptors organization, like, what made you turn to Europe? Was that you giving up on the NBA dream, or was it trying a different route?
I think it was more trying a different route. Obviously, you know, everyone's path is different. But for me, I spent 2 years with 905. I just didn't see that path to get to the NBA, just trying to grind it out in the G League for another 3-4 years. Obviously, some people do that and it works for some people, so, you know, shout out to them. But for me at the time, me and my agent talked, and we just wanted to start building my resume a little bit. You know, coming overseas, I started in Division II Turkey. Obviously, I wasn't, you know, a 20-point-per-game score in the G League, so you had to start somewhere. But taking advantage of that opportunity and then just kind of building from there. So, you know, I just used it as a chance for me to build a resume, make a name for myself a little bit, and then hopefully use that to either, you know, play highest level here in EuroLeague or maybe one day go back to the NBA.
So you go from second division Turkey to Pro A France, which is a huge jump, and then, you know, becoming one of the MVP finalists in that league behind Victor Wembanyama. I don't know if you guys have heard of him before, but I mean, you come to the British Basketball League, a league that we are in transition of trying to, you know, up the level when it comes to production and marketing everything. And you've come from a league that's one of the best in the world. Just give the fans a little bit of how far we got to go. What's the difference between Pro A France and our league at this moment in time?
I think the only difference is, you know, the level of engagement off the court and on the court, you know what I mean? So being in Turkey, being in D2, you know, the beginning of the season, we didn't have any fans really, but by the time the championship came around, it was standing room only, ticket sales being sold out days before, you know, we played. And then going to France, it was like every game was packed. It was 100% sold out. Fans were into it. up and screaming the whole time. You know, I think we have one of the best home court advantages. I know Dante is going to say Nancy, but, you know, we can debate about that later. But I think it's just that energy that they bring every single night, every single game. And then obviously it's the names in the league. I mean, we had last year Wembanyama, number one pick, Mike James, who's been, you know, one of the best players in Europe for forever, Nando DeColo, people like that. So, but in terms of just, you know, basketball wise, I think you can see that this league is growing and it's definitely getting more talented. As you see every night, you know, teams are going at it and it's, you know, whether it's a close game, whether it's an upset, you know what I mean? So I think basketball wise, the parity in the league is where it needs to be. I just think having more fan engagement, having more involvement, game days, off the court, on the court, I think that's the next step that the BBL can take.
Well, let's stay here. Let me ask you this, because that's very interesting, because we've been debating about this on the show. You know, I've been talking to fans about this on Twitter. That fan engagement thing, because you see it all everywhere in Europe besides Great Britain, and we're starting to be educated on it because there's four teams playing in Europe. Is that simply down to a marketing thing? Is it down to the more talent you bring to the league that the more engaged fans will be? Or do you think it's just a cultural thing?
I think just being here for a few months, you can kind of tell that it's kind of more of a cultural thing and a knowledge thing. You can kind of see that, you know, soccer is the main sport here. Like, people will, you know, live and die by their soccer team. So I think that's probably the biggest thing. Compared to France, like, where I was, our team, the fans were going to be with us no matter what. Like, preseason, when I came back and played in France, I had like 50 people show up to a game just to support me. So I think it's the culture and the knowledge of basketball. You can see, like, in Spain, in Serbia, and in France, like, the fans understand what's going on. Like, if a foul is called, they go crazy. Or if they feel like their team needs a lift or a push, they start getting louder and louder. So I think just stuff like that, because you can see soccer is number one, obviously. I don't think basketball is going to overtake soccer for quite a while. But to kind of have it up there battling with the soccer team, like, West Ham's right across the street. So if we can have the same amount of fan engagement that West Ham has at a London Lions game consistently, then I think it'll definitely help.
So just kind of following on, like, what attracted you to the project here at London Lions? You know, like you said, you're in Pro A France, you know, packed houses, you're performing. There must have been something here at London Lions that really attracted you and felt like you could do something here.
So I think first it was obviously an English-speaking country. That's the biggest thing for any basketball players. You want to feel at home. You want to feel comfortable. But then, you know, just kind of seeing what they did last year in the Euro Cup, like, they were right there on the cusp of being almost a championship team, battling, you know, for top four or whatever in the playoffs. So looking at the roster when they were interested in me, obviously I knew the coach beforehand, Ryan Schmidt, because he coached me with 905 for 2 years. Me and him had a really good relationship. So talking to him, seeing, you know, Sam and I think, I don't remember if I was the last one to sign, but seeing Sam, Tariq, Sharma, people that I've, you know, seen play, played against. And then how they were telling me how I was going to fit into the offense, how I was going to fit into the team. Everything just seemed like it was a perfect fit at the time. Obviously, we're working to get Sam back. Sharma hopefully will be back by next game. So you can see we're building something in Euro Cup. Obviously, British League, we're trying to, you know, maintain that high status of dominance that they put on last year. So, but Euro Cup, we definitely want to take that next step. And, you know, I think we're trying to prove that in how we play. And going into every Euro Cup game, like, we have something to prove. Even BBL, like, we have something to prove that no one's going to give us anything. I think that's obviously the mentality of the team is something I was attracted to.
Yeah. How did the loss of Coach Ryan kind of hit you? Were you disappointed that you didn't get a chance, or did it just kind of, was it on to the next?
Yeah, I think it was just, obviously basketball is a business. So, you know, you can be upset all you want to, but at the same time, you got to 2 feet to the ground and keep it pushing. So, but obviously I was extremely happy for him. I told him in summer league when I saw him in Vegas, I told him, you know, hey, you got to do what you got to do. I know that's a huge decision for you, for your family to be back in the States and coaching in Atlanta. Obviously, we've been trying to link up, have him coach me again for since I left Toronto, to be honest. But everything happens for a reason. And I know he's going to do great things there. And I'm going to continue to try and do great things here. And we're going to follow each other no matter what. And maybe one day, you know, we can link back up again. But basketball is a business. So I was extremely happy for him. And I told him if an NBA team called me and he was still here, I would jump at the opportunity. So it was no hard.
Damn there. Right.
I was just super excited for him.
Yeah, let's stay on basketball. obviously, you guys are balancing a British Basketball League schedule and a Euro Cup schedule. Currently, you know, I mean, you're halfway, not even halfway through that Euro Cup schedule. What's the difference between the level of play between our league and that level?
Man, I think it's just the attention to detail that you got to bring every single night. Obviously, the player level is extremely high. You have some of the best players in Europe playing, but it's just you have to be locked in every possession, every game. It's just BBL, you know, you can kind of get lost in the transition up and down, you know, who's the most athletic, who shoots the most, you know what I mean? But Euro Cup, you're playing against teams where every possession counts. The score may be 70-something to 60-something as opposed to BBL. You can put up 100 to 90 on any given night. So I think just how much our athleticism, how much our size, it just doesn't matter just because everyone is like that. And it comes down to us personally, got to stay healthy. Obviously, health was a problem for them last year. This year, we're trying to stay as healthy as possible. But with the schedule, you know what I mean? Sometimes people got to sit and it's next man up. Like Rokas gave us good minutes in Badalona. You know, we're going to have a few more guys coming back. But, you know, if guys have to play 30, 35 minutes to get the win, that's just what we got to do.
And you told us off air that you just come in from practice this Monday afternoon. You're flying tomorrow. And, you know, for most players, that's a dream, right? Travel the world, play basketball, very little practice. But this is your first experience in the Euro Cup competition. What's been the biggest challenge for you personally?
I think it's how much, you know, the travel and how much all of that really takes a toll on you. Because I'm used to the past few years, just one game a week, take a bus, come back, and then have 6 days, 5 days off to get ready for the next game. But here is, you know, two games a week, sometimes three. We played 3 and 4 days, you know what I mean? So it's just the schedule and how much that really impacts you. And then I think another thing that I'm getting used to is just people being in and out of the lineup. Like sometimes guys, you have to rest them. Sometimes people are injured. You know, I'm not used to playing on minutes restrictions. I'm used to once I'm on the court, I want to play all 40 minutes, but obviously you can't do that every single game because your body's just not going, it's not going to end well for you by the end of the season. So just getting used to all of that while trying to maintain, you know, the level that which I want to play at and just trying to be as consistent as possible, whether it's a Euro Cup game, BBL game. I know we're going to have, you know, a trophy coming up, then playoffs for Euro Cup and BBL. So it's going to be hectic, but just trying to stay consistent as possible.
Well, we want to make sure you're as rested as we possibly can. I don't want any calls from coach. So just one last question from us. I want to point out something I saw on the socials just before the Leicester Riders game. Jordan Taylor said in the huddle, you know, that you guys needed to treat that game like a Euro Cup game. Now, my kind of question, and, you know, it's some insight for the fans as well, because I know, it, you know, they may read it different ways. Was that a respect thing for the Riders organization and how hard they pushed them last year? Or did you feel like you guys maybe not took your eye off the ball is quite the right words because the schedule's hectic, but in that Plymouth defeat, do you think you just needed to lock back in?
I think it was a little bit of both. You could kind of tell that Plymouth game, we felt that disappointment of losing to Tel Aviv. And, you know, we went into that game thinking we're in first place. They were in last place at the time. Like, they're just going to fold and give us the game just because of who we are and the name on our jersey. So, you know, fans are going to read into that different ways. But I think that Leicester game, obviously, it's a rivalry. But it's also major respect to every team in this league. Like, we can't go from a big win in Badalona or in Turkey the next 2 days and then come back and just, you know, be on chill mode just because we beat a team in Spain and we played really well. Because obviously I've been on the other side of it where, you know, Monaco plays a big EuroLeague game and they have to come to us in 2 days. And we've been practicing for a week getting ready for them. And, you know, they have 24 hours to get ready for us. So I've been on both sides of it now. And it's not a shot at them. It's not a shot at any BBL team. It's a respect thing. Like, they're coming after us. They know we're in first place. We have a target on our back. We can't treat this like they're just going to give us the game. We have to play every game like we're the number one team and that we're supposed to be the dominant team in this league.
So regardless of who suited up that game, it sounds like you're saying from a Plymouth perspective that that's a legit win for them, because there's been a lot of debate about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a legit win for them. We had guys playing. I played, Dante played, Mo played, Gay played. No matter who was out there, obviously, you know, we had 3 games in 4 days at that time, so we couldn't really play 30 minutes, 25 minutes. But, you know, when we were out there, they were scoring on us. We put the young kids out there. I mean, I say young kids. I'm young too, so I can't even say that. But we put the other guys out there, and, you know, they did their thing. Like, major shout out to them. Obviously, they probably had that game circled on their calendar for a while. And they jumped at that opportunity. We had injuries. We had people resting. So there's no excuses from us. We lost pretty bad. So, but I think most of them saw my face after the game and I was just kind of nodding, listening to them talk and scream and all that stuff. So I got that game circled December 8th when they got to come to us. Trust me, I'm gonna remember that.
Okay. That's what we need. That is what we need.
Hold on, Jay. I got one more before you close him out. I'm a little bit greedy, but I just wanted to ask because I've been around you guys for, I think I can provide from an outsider a better perspective than anybody, because I'm the only one there on the feet on the ground watching you guys. And most of the guys on your roster could literally be playing in any country, any league. And the thing that I notice about y'all is your camaraderie. You guys, last year's team was really close, but you guys seem so close this year. And you individually, you personally, why are you so happy playing for the London Lions?
Man, it's just me personally. I just enjoy playing basketball. I just want to be out there playing, whether it's 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 40. It really doesn't matter to me. I just love playing basketball. And I love this team. Like you said, we're really close. You know, I hang out with them all the time. When we're on the road, you know, we're in each other's rooms, whether it's watching basketball or just talking trash, joking around. You know, we try not to take this too seriously because obviously, you know, people say it's a kid's game. You have to enjoy it like that, because if you take it too serious, obviously there's going to be ups and downs throughout the season. But the more that you can enjoy it, the more that you can embrace each other, because I think Connor said it one game, we don't know who's going to be back next year. So we have to take advantage of this special team that we have that they built and put together, and, you know, take advantage of it. So me personally, I love this team. I have nothing bad to say about any of them. Obviously, I want everyone healthy. I want everyone to play at their highest level so that, you know, next year, whether it's here, whether I come back, whoever comes back, whoever leaves, whatever the case is, they're just doing what they love and making as much money for their family as possible. So, you know, I'm rocking with my guys till the end of the season. You know, obviously, I want everyone to come back. I want us to run it back, championship, no championship, it doesn't matter. But we just love each other so much, and we just want to go out there and play for each other. And you can kind of see that in how we play and how we move the ball, how much, you know, we're laughing and smiling on the bench and stuff like that. So this is definitely one of the closest teams that I've been on. And like you said, I'm just lucky to have these guys because obviously they could be playing anywhere and they chose to play here and we're all together. So why not take advantage of it?
Well said.
Well, look, it's a great time to sign out, but I'm gonna say this right now. I feel like this is just halftime of this conversation. I feel like we've got a long way to go. I feel like there's going to be an MVP conversation coming up sometime soon. I feel like we need to get into this sports marketing, but for now, we're going to let you get your rest, ice up, get ready for your travel. But hopefully you come back on the show again, Matt. We'd love to have you.
Oh yeah, anytime. Just let me know. I'm here, and I appreciate y'all having me on. Obviously, Drew definitely has a special place because I saw the preseason awards picks and he was the only one to pick me to possibly win MVP. Yeah. So obviously he's my guy for that, but I appreciate
always
y'all having
creeping,
me.
He's creeping, man. He's always creeping.
I appreciate y'all having me for sure.
No doubt. Thanks, man. Matt. Appreciate your time, Matt. We'll see you soon. Good luck to you, buddy.
No problem.
Man, Jay, what a stand-up dude. I got time for Matt Morgan, man.
Man, absolute hooper on the court, but what a great guy off the court. We could have gone another couple of hours right there.
Oh, easily, man. That was a lot of fun. So, like you mentioned, I like how you already set up for part two. So, it'll make that email a little bit easier when I send that down the line.
Set it up, baby. Let's go.
Well, let's go. Let's move on to the rest of the league, and let's start with the Leicester Riders. You know, I had mentioned of how I felt like they were the best team fit to beat the London Lions. And after watching them on Sky Sports on Friday night, I still walked out of there convinced. You know, they looked them right in the eye. They weren't scared. They weren't afraid. They battled them, came down late to the fourth quarter, made a few mistakes. And then they go to Cheshire on Sunday. A team that, you know, they'd be looking for revenge, took their first loss of the season at home, 20-point loss, by the way, and start off really well. And then Cheshire pull off late, winning 102-96. And I think what stands out for me is the 102 points that they've given up and also the 102 against London. So, you know, I just noticed that they gave up 102 to Cheshire and London. So, I mean, just what's your early thoughts on the Leicester Riders?
Well, I think, first of all, I think we've talked about it off air, you know, like Coach Rob seems really sort of calm, and I think the organization's very calm about it. So I think they're expecting this kind of roller coaster of results because they've gone so young. There's this real intriguing experiment of starting those, you know, those five rookies and then having that experience come off the bench. And then usually going into the fourth, there's a little mix and match, you know, Kimball for sure. But then there's the additions of a few others here and there. So I just think it's going to be expected. And I would guess that if Leicester Riders are going to come good, it's going to be late. You know, I could see them going on a late run. So right now I feel like Coach Rob's getting a lot of experience into them. He for sure would probably want a few more wins, and there probably should be a few more wins on the board. I think they are giving up just a little bit too much, you know. So we've seen it over the years, you know, that the Riders have flipped between two different ways. There's been that real defensive grind-minded teams that Rob's had, and then there's been those up-tempo point-scoring teams. But this one's probably just leaking a little bit too much. But there doesn't seem to be any panic, and I just think that they're just gonna ride that out and then look out for them later on in the season. But you know, shout out to Cheshire as well. Like they just look the real deal right now. I just really love the way they are gonna play their game regardless. They don't go to a plan B. They just keep coming at you. And they are relentless. So, you know, it's not a bad loss by any stretch of the imagination, but their youth for now are going to mean Leicester Riders are on a little bit of a roller coaster.
Yeah, and I think, you know, speaking of the Cheshire Phoenix, I think they're, like I said last episode, there's nobody on that team that scares you, But man, those pieces of the puzzle just fit together so perfectly. They only need to do one thing, one adjustment. And that's when Rideau is shooting free throws, they need to play jazz music in the arena, because you can't have your starting point guard shooting 60% from the free throw line. So come on, Rideau, you got to, the ball's going to be in your hand, baby. You can't be a foul of Shaq. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I like the word that you used there. You said panic. And that's the thing that I've noticed about Coach Rob this year, is that you and I could know Rob Pattanastro very well. And I think one way that we can use to describe him over the years is very passionate, very animated. But he seems to be like really relaxed this year. And I know I had tweeted earlier that, you know, he's going to have a head full of gray hair. But now I kind of take that back. I think he understands this kind of evolution for the Leicester Riders, because it happens to every team. There was a point when I played for Newcastle that I felt like we were never going to lose. And then the Leicester Riders take that baton from us. And then they went through a stretch where it seemed like no matter how the game was going, Leicester Riders always found a way to win. And now you look at those two fourth quarters, and now the tide is kind of changing a little bit. And I just think it's simply down to inexperience. And I had asked Rob about it after the game, but he kind of had his team's back, which I like. Like, I asked him, does he think it's because of the youth? And he kind of didn't put it on that. But it clearly is, because if you watch the London Lions game, and I was there on the sideline and had a great perspective. And, you know, we saw the video with Caleb Asbury early in the year. He legit has a chip on his shoulder. Like, he was talking smack from the beginning of the game. And like, he blocked Matt Morgan's jump shot and told him to get that shit out of here, which I thought was hilarious. But yeah, I like that though. Like, they just not scared. And then I started to see, which I haven't seen this year, is the point guard starting to chirp a little bit. Name slips my mind. Help me out.
Pinson.
Xavier Pinson was bumping, and then Gabe Olesinski was talking a little bit, which you don't normally see. So that was really fun. But, you know, down the stretch, there were two moving screens, some ill-advised shots, early shots that I think Azani even mentioned over the telecast, that's just simply down to youth. And then you see it in Cheshire as well. Shot selection kind of questionable. Another moving screen. So I think they'll be fascinating to follow this year. But I think you're right. Like, they're going to be a team that you're not going to want to face in about February, March, when they got a chance to grow up.
I'm for sure.
Well, moving things on to my team, the Newcastle Eagles. It's crazy how things can change so quickly in sport. In 1 week, you know, you're hitting that red button, you know, you're looking at Stoodle's face, you're looking at Lloyd Gardner's face, and you've been there before, Jay. Like, you can see the sense of urgency or the panic on their face. And then boom, the Newcastle Eagles go 3-0 this week, starting in Europe in Tuesday in Latvia. And then they come back. They win at home against Manchester, then go 400 miles to Plymouth and then get it done. So, you know, Roland, I mean, what have you liked about the Eagles this past week?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It's, you know, I think everybody saw this like embarrassment of riches, you know, all these BBL stars, and thought it was just going to fit. And I wasn't one of those that really kind of bought into that. It's really tough trying to bring a team together, especially like that. That, like I said, so many of those players have been stars on other teams, and now you got to start making sacrifices. But I think the observations for me is, you know, Ward Hibbert and Defoe going into the starting lineup also, I think, have been two masterstrokes. And they're going to be two players that probably are not going to get the plaudits. They're not going to get the focus. But, you know, especially Ward Hibbert is a glue guy. You know, there's nothing much that he can't do. He's not a specialist in any one particular area. But he just plays the game of basketball, you know. And, you know, I think people can say it's the veteran experience of Darius Defoe, but he's always been that sacrificial guy. Like, he's never, you know, wanted to take all the limelight for himself. He's always been a team guy. So I think those two in particular are starting to really get a bit of an imprint on this team. And then just those, you know, just the wheels are starting to grease just a little bit more. The actions are starting to come off a little bit more. The ball's moving a little bit more. And then it does make the game a little bit easier. And you get that European win that gives you the belief. And as I said, it was an impressive week because they had to really handle some, you know, pretty horrendous travel. And to go down to Plymouth and take care of business down there just shows them that they have laser focus right now.
Yeah, just one small correction. Ward Hibbert's coming off the bench, but it feels like he's starting just because of the way that he's playing.
No, sorry, I meant Defoe was starting, not Hibbert.
Yeah. Right, okay.
That's what I meant. I meant Defoe was starting. I didn't mean Ward Hibbert was starting.
Oh, okay, got correction. You. So, you know, the biggest thing for me, and I said this on Twitter, that there's two things of what's different with the Newcastle Eagles. The first thing is entering Defoe into the starting lineup. Since entering him to the starting lineup against Bruno on Halloween, the Newcastle Eagles are 4-1. And there's two things that he does. He anchors your defense, which those, you know, Jay, as a coach, like those first 5 minutes are important. They set the table of how your team's going to play the rest of the game. And so defensively, he's being able to anchor that by communicating, being in the right spot. And so that set them up with a little bit more bite on that side of the ball. And plus he has the highest plus minus on a team, which at year 20 is just nuts. Right. The thing is that like for the last 5 years with Coach McLeod and Mark Stoodle, it's tough because, and you could probably give perspective about this more than anybody because you've been a coach. Darius like has been the best player, the best option at that spot, but coaches feel like they have to start the American or the big money player and justify for whatever reason. But, you know, when you get to this, at this point to where it was clear, the Newcastle Eagles were in a position of seek and swim, they had to start, Darius Defoe. Before I move on to my next point, do you feel like is this some credence to that point that I just made as a coach, from a coach's perspective?
Yeah, I think so. And I think there's also an element that we take him for granted. I think when you actually look at, you know, when you look at it, just how great he's been, I think we just take it for granted that Darius Defoe is always going to be there and he's always going to be a member of the team. And I think there's also an element as well. He's defying age, right? You know, he just doesn't look like he's slowing down. And that would probably be playing on a coach's mind too, is, you know, what's life after Darius going to look like? Let's start preparing for that. And then maybe you just move just a little bit too quick when really you could make that transition with him, you know, because the time will tell, right? There will be that time where he's either going to notice it himself and retire, or there's going to be times where we start to visually see it and it becomes time. And I just think, you know, both coaches have probably tried to rush that a little bit. And, you know, absolutely, there's an expectation probably top to bottom in that club that if you're bringing in a player, they should be better than Darius Defoe, right? Why are we recruiting somebody that's a lesser player? But he's a competitor, man, and he's been brought up by probably one of the biggest competitors this league has ever seen. So he's not giving anybody his spot. And until he decides that it's time to give it a day, he's going to fight for that starting spot, and he just keeps proving people wrong.
And I actually feel like Del Pesce is playing better coming off the bench. He hasn't quite looked the same to me. He hasn't looked like the Bristol Del Pesce. And I feel like maybe like coming off the bench can relax him a little bit, because I don't know what it is. You know, there's a lot of pressure playing with that Newcastle Eagles jersey on in that arena. So maybe that relaxes him, but he's been playing much better, I got to say. But here's my next point, and I'm interested to get your take on this, because the second reason why Newcastle's playing better, and I hate to say this, is because Larry Austin Jr. is hurt. Now, I'm not saying that the team is better without him, but my point is, and I think this would have been the case regardless of who got hurt, if it was McGill or if it was Jordan Johnson. But my point is that before Larry Austin got hurt, to me, I think it was very obvious that Coach Stoodle didn't know who his best unit was. And he was flip-flopping and trying to find that out, but never could figure that out. And I mentioned this like in my BBL article at the beginning of the year. Coaching talent is hard, man. Like what Coach Petrov is doing at London, he makes it look easy. What Coach Ryan Smith did last year, people just think you can chalk it up. No, it's not that easy. Like you got to have the right mix. You got to push the right buttons. And so sometimes less is more and it's easier to coach because you don't have any options. And like, so, you know, Jordan Johnson, Ricky McGill playing a little bit more can build a little bit more rhythm. And now both of them are playing better offensively. And now everything is starting to click. And so now the interesting thing will be is when Larry gets back is how do you fit him in? But, you know, they're playing much better because of one less player, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think the only thing that I would disagree on is I think that it's been a slight blessing for Coach Stutel that it was Larry Austin. Like I don't want to see him injured and like he's still one of my favorite players in the league. But every game that I've watched looks like they just don't quite know what to do with Larry Austin yet. Like it felt like he was the it felt like somebody was on a date and that guy's third wheeling. And that's what it feels like for Larry Austin. Like, I can't see where, like, I can see him trying to get rhythm, but it wasn't quite coming. Whereas actually you could see, like, there was some rhythm to Jordan. He's the early pace setter. You know, he's got the ball in his hands. And then after a little while, he tends to defer to Ricky McGill, who kind of starts to come alive. So I think that that's been a slight bit of fortune for, Coach Stutes. Now the headache's going to be is like, or hopefully what he's been doing is taking some time thinking when he comes back, how can we best utilize this guy's skills? Because I still think he's one of the biggest competitors in the league. And he just didn't look like he was naturally seeking out options, especially when I saw him live and in person in that Bristol game. It just looked like, I know he was injured, you know, so he was carrying a little bit, but he just didn't look like he knew where he could be aggressive and he couldn't. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, but at least they're playing well. But, that's great news for Newcastle. But let's shift down to Surrey because they picked up an impressive win against Bristol. It was funny because I have my in-laws in town, my brother-in-law, my father-in-law, and I forced them to watch British basketball while we were eating dinner and drinking wine, and we had Surrey on the screen. The game was late, and they kind of got into it because it was close, and my words to them were, just wait. Surrey will find a way to lose. But they ended up pulling it out, and Wang making two deep threes to finish the game off. But one thing that stood out to me was, and I don't know if you caught this, but so we're watching it and my father-in-law was like, wait, is he crying? Referring to Quinn Cooper. And I was like, is he? And then I was like, I'm not sure. But then Hoops, and then we see it on social media and it actually looked like he was crying. So my question to you, Jay, is have you ever cried after winning a regular season game before? Or is that how desperate the Surrey Scorchers were of getting a dub?
I don't know if I cried. I don't know if I've ever cried, but I can definitely say that I was emotional when we first beat you dudes at
oh, I remember that. Oh, you were boohooing, man. You were on your hands and knees.
I think it was an overtime game, wasn't it? And Donald Robinson just took over. And I just thought to myself,
you hadn't won a game.
I just thought to myself, finally, you know, like I was like, and I beat Fab as well. Come on, everyone.
You were like, woof, they're going to fire me if I wasn't going to win this game. But, sheesh.
But as you said, like the best coaches just do not show that kind of emotion. Like now I'm older, like you look back at that stuff and you just think you're an idiot, you know, but like, it's hard not to get caught up in the emotions of things. Crying maybe. I don't know, a little bit too far for me, but what's really nice is whether he was crying or not, you know, like, because he might not have been, is, just how much they're invested in that club, how much they're invested in their coach. I hope that's a sign of just how hard they're pulling in that direction to try and turn things around. And it's hard. They've got history against them as well, you know, and that is a pressure. I don't care what anyone says, you know, Coach Lloyd is a good coach. And, sometimes trying to turn around a whole history of that type of thing, because it's gone on for a while. And the Rock can set in sometimes. You got to break that and you got to break the mold. And it definitely looks like he's got the guys that care.
Yeah. Shout out to Surrey and shout out to Lloyd Gardner for, you know, sticking in there. And I don't know why. It's just something about that team that I want to see win. So I was actually up celebrating when they won and they were like, "You said, told you so." So it was a fun moment in my house. But let's move to the mailbag. And we had two great questions in the mailbag, but unfortunately, we only got time for one. So Phil Groves, London Lions fan, will come back to it next week. But I want to finish out touching on this one from UK Hoops fan who wants to get our thoughts on having more financial fairness for players and team staff. So he asks, should there be a minimum player wage, a minimum roster cap spin, or anything else, you know, in regards to financial security and beyond retirement? You know, I think similar to last week, like this is a question that like, personally, I need to stew on a little bit more to really figure out my own personal thoughts for it. But, you know, the first thing that I thought of, cause I saw Dave Forrester kind of reply to it. And he said, you know, raise more money, can't spend what you don't have. And, I think that is the first thing, like you can't put in a minimum wage for a team like Cheshire, not at this moment. Like, I don't think everyone's at that point yet. I just think naturally over time that the money will just naturally go up because the quality of players that keep dropping in this league, like a Matt Morgan, guys like that, and kind of like what Aaron Radin was saying about, you know, our league becoming more visible, guys being more attracted here. You see how happy Matt Morgan said he was playing here. That's only going to be more and more, and teams are going to realize the pricing point for those type of players. And it's just going to be a case of you either going to do it or you're not. But I think similar to Newcastle this year, I don't know what their budget is, but I would have to assume that it's probably the most they've ever spent in regards to the personnel that they have. I don't know that to be true, but I'm just assuming because for two reasons, you're feeling the pressure of having to not keep up with London, but be competitive. But then also having to please the fans because there's no way that the Newcastle Eagles could afford to have another bad year. So I just think over time, like the money will just be slightly lifted because I think if you look at the overall budget over the league and you take London out of the picture, I mean, I would guess that the money is more than it's ever been.
Yeah. I mean, I think we see a lot of these questions, you know, from the fans and stuff like that. And I feel like a lot of it is trying to look at, either people within our sport or leagues within our sport or leagues outside of our sport, and they're trying to compare it right now. But what we need to realize is that the financial threshold has been broken to try and help us grow. So agree or disagree, you know, so like I'm sure there's people out there that agree with that. There's people that disagree with that. All of that stuff is irrelevant because that is what is happening right now, you know? So that is the direction the league's gone in. I agree with some of the noise that I see out there in terms of, you know, we would love to see our British players making sure that they're looked after a lot better, but I feel like it's taken a huge step in that direction in terms of just listening to conversations with, you know, London Lions British players, you know, Pat last week talking to us off air in terms of how they're looking after them in their European adventures and things like that. That's going to improve. And then I think all the financial rules and everything that needs to be in place will be a byproduct of the growth. You know, I think when we get to where we get to, go back, let's answer Dave's question, there will be more finances. It will be split through the league, not evenly, you know, like, because that's not how it works. You know, there's going to be high earners, there's going to be medium earners, low earners. That's just the way the cookie crumbles. But there will be some financial stability or more financial stability for these players. As you said, you see more of the Matt Morgans and the Sam Deckers, and the eyes are on this league. there's more responsibility on the league. It will happen. I just think everybody just needs to be a little bit patient. And as we've seen, Drew, like everybody wants to kind of come out and really fire their opinions, and they're very, very welcome to those opinions. And that's what keeps this show going. But ultimately, we know that that's what the league has done. They've broken the structure in terms, in their eyes, they're going to find growth. There are more franchises that needed to be added to this league. And I think that some way down the list, there will be some financial structure there, but it's not important right now.
Yeah, I think you answered that perfectly. And the biggest walk away from that is we just have to be patient. I think because things are moving so fast in our league, everyone now wants everything right now, but it's just one thing at a time. We know what that is production, leveling that up, because according to Aaron Radin, that's going to open the doors to so many other avenues. And then we can start talking about where the money needs to go. But right now, I think it's invested there. That's where it's placed. And I just think over time, everything will take care of itself. I honestly think 5 years from now, it's going to be a whole different ball game here.
Amen. So, let's move on. Let's just finish off very quickly. Game of the week. Anything you see in there, Mr. Lasker? For me, it is Newcastle visiting Caledonia. Caledonia unbeaten at home, and the Eagles in red hot form. Can they take their feathers up there and do more than just tickle the gladiators? Let's see. Tune in and be ready for that game.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to Surrey. Surrey plays, they host Bristol again. And I want to see, similar to your game of the week, I want Plymouth to prove to me that win against London wasn't an aberration, because they were atrocious against the Newcastle Eagles. Like, it was like, where was that team a week ago? Similar to Surrey Scorchers. Like, if they win this game, I think that we can legit say that they're coming, because it's been a lot mentioned about their schedule, about how they're like turning the corner, but not quite yet. And so, like, this is a game where you can prove to us that win against Bristol wasn't an aberration. You are really, really here and turning the corner. So, a lot of questions I think will be answered in both of those matchups. Looking forward to them.
Amazing. Well, before we leave, we have a new sponsor to announce. We are building some fantastic partnerships. This one will be fun-filled and giveaway galore as we welcome Hoopin' and Lootin' to the pod, the UK's number one jersey destination and home of the Basketball Creatives platform, a celebration of basketball culture and entrepreneurs in the UK. You can shop all things at hoopinandlootin.com and follow the socials for updates on stock, basketball news and content. If you have been following our socials, you know we are going to choose a player a week to send in nicknames. We'll pick a winner each week, carry that to the end of the month, where Elliot at Hoopin' and Lootin' will choose a prize winner. Now, just to pick on you just a little bit, and Mr. Lasker has been very kind to you fans and said that generally he switches off at this time, but I did pick our first nickname, which now I am going to send to Elliot to put on the socials, so you cannot miss it. We are starting with Sam Decker. Can you beat my nickname of the cheat code, which I coined him as in one of the finals last season? So get your comments on the socials now. Elliot is going to kick some butt. Anyway, that is it for me this week. Thank you, as always, for your support. If you think your brand would benefit with some love on the pod, then jump into our DMs. But until then, Drew, lead us out.
Yes, as Jay mentioned, get out there on the socials, give us a nickname, and guess what? It's a way to get some free merch from Hootin' and Lootin', which we know he has the freshest of the fresh gear when it comes to jerseys and hoodies and et cetera. So get out there and have some fun, guys. But thanks again to our sponsors. Thanks to everyone out there for listening. And we'll see you guys next week. Like we say, every week we're trying to bring you the best of the best guests that we can bring on here to keep you guys entertained, informed and educated. But until then, we'll catch you guys next week, same place, same time, here on the Drew and Jay pod. Peace.